All right, hope you found Habakkuk chapter 3. We're going to get going. We're going to look right at the end of the chapter. We're taking this break from our series through 1 Corinthians for a little while, just for 2 weeks as we celebrated our church's 7th year anniversary from being planted. Last week, we looked at the end of Acts chapter 2, that first church, the first church in Acts there, and how they got together and they were just celebrating all kinds of things. They were celebrating together that as they gathered. They were celebrating eating food together. They were celebrating blessing each other, providing for each other's needs. They were just a church that was partying in so many ways. But you know how that often works, right? When you find something new, when you find something exciting, maybe a new group of people, a new community, and you're just all about it. There's momentum. You're fired up. Let's go. And then after a while, it gets kind of routine, same people doing the same things. And you wake up one day and you're just kind of like, oh man, my heart's just kind of not in this anymore. And you realize I'm going through the routines. I'm still doing the same things, but man, I just kind of don't feel it anymore. It doesn't feel celebratory. It feels like I'm just doing this out of routine or duty or obligation. And so the question comes, what do we do when we're gathered to celebrate something, but we don't feel it anymore? What do we do in that situation? Habakkuk gives us the answer. He tells us in Habakkuk 3, verse 17, check it out. Though the fig tree does not bud, and there is no fruit on the vines, though the olive crop fails and the fields produce no food, though the flocks disappear from the pen and there's no herds in the stalls, yet I will celebrate in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. Habakkuk's describing a time where life is really hard, where the fig tree isn't budding, there's no grapes on the vine, a time where life isn't going the way you want it to go. And what Habakkuk's saying in verse 18 is that even when life isn't good, it's still possible to celebrate. Yet, I will celebrate in the Lord. I'll rejoice, he says. He's giving us God's people's, our response when our life circumstances stink. Habakkuk says, we can celebrate. Now, he's not saying that it's a celebration of our circumstances. We're not gluttons for punishment. We don't want life to be bad, but it's a celebration in our circumstances. While things are bad, it's not a waiting for things to turn good, not a waiting for the bad to be over. He's saying right now, when all of this is happening, I celebrate. All of these things, these figs, grapes, olives, sheep, cattle, that was everything 2,500 years ago when this was written. This was all your investments, all of your work, all of your income and how you ate. Habakkuk is describing a total economic disaster, a time where people have lost everything and would likely be dying of hunger. And what he's saying is that it's possible to live a life that even when circumstances are at their worst, you can still truly celebrate. You can have joy. Guys, if that is really, truly possible, then we should do everything in our power to figure out how that's possible, right? Because life isn't filled with just good times. Bad times are coming for all of us. Maybe for some of us, they're already here. Wouldn't you love to have this deep, unflinching joy that doesn't waver when times get difficult? When you're in financial crisis and you lose your income or the market crashes. When you're in family crisis and your kids are going off the rails, making life so hard. When you're in relational crisis and your friends aren't treating you the way you'd like to be treated and don't show up for you when you feel like you need them most. Wouldn't you love to be able to celebrate? Not ignorantly, not naively, but because you truly feel it. Because you've truly found something that's more vital to your joy than your circumstances. We're going to talk today about three ways that it's possible for us to celebrate even when life circumstances aren't what we want them to be. Three ways for us to celebrate even when there's no harvest at all. That's what the Israelites would have thought about here with the mention of these crops, the harvest. Back in Deuteronomy 26, God told his people what he wants them to do when he gives them a harvest. When he makes the figs, the grapes, the olives grow, God tells his people this. Check it out on the screen. When you enter the land the Lord your God has given you as an inheritance, and you take possession of it and live in it, take some of the first of all the land's produce that you harvest from the land the Lord your God has given you and put it in a basket. Then go to the place where the Lord your God chooses to have his name dwell. When you come before the priest who's serving at that time, say to him, today I declare to the Lord your God that I have entered the land the Lord swore to our ancestors to give us. Then the priest will take the basket from you and place it on the altar of the Lord your God. God tells his people to take some of the first of their harvest and bring it to God in celebration, to actually give it away as an act of celebratory worship. Now listen, God has always wanted his people to be generous givers of all that we receive, to fight against our tendency to hoard and only take care of ourselves, to fight against our tendency to trust in our wealth and our stuff. But here, what's really interesting about how is how this relates to Habakkuk and what's happening. Here's what I mean. If you were a farmer in this time, you would work all year long planting your crops, watering your crops, protecting your crops. Your crops were everything. You would work all year long for these crops. And then when it was time for harvest, when the time came for you to actually go out and collect what it is that you'd been investing in, when it was time for you to go out and get what you've earned, your money, you would go out and you still wouldn't know exactly how much you had. It would take several days of gathering in that harvest to finally have it all in and look at it and say, okay, here's what I have. Here's what this produced. Here's my income. And what God is saying is that don't wait until the total amount comes in. Give when you collect the first day. Give of your first fruits. That goes so against how we want to handle our money and so many other things in life. We naturally want to wait until the entire harvest comes in, until we have our entire income, until we look at what we've made, compare it with our lifestyle expenses, and make a decision about how much we have left over to give generously with. You know, once we have our income, once we pay the mortgage, pay the bills, pay for the 5 streaming services, pay for our 24-hour membership, put the money aside for all the dog grooming expenses, once we have all the stuff covered, then we see what's left and we say, okay, I can give to God out of this. But that's not what God says to do. He doesn't say to collect the whole harvest and then give. He says to give first before you know how much you're going to bring in. Because you see, if we wait until the whole harvest is in, we're going to be giving out of our surplus. We'll be giving out of the extra money that we've taken after we've taken care of all of our needs. And so our life, the way we want to live it, it won't actually change at all. But if you give of your first fruits before you know what you bring in, that's going to change your life. That's going to actually be a sacrifice. And that's what we're seeing. That's what we see in Habakkuk, that we can be a people who celebrate sacrificially. We can be a people who celebrate sacrificially. Even when times are tough, even when there's no harvest, we can celebrate by giving our finances, giving our time, giving our energy, our friendship, our service in a way that's an actual sacrifice to us. Not just out of the surplus of what we have left, not our scraps. See, guys, because when times are good, when the fields are producing fruit, it's easy to give in a way that kind of feels sacrificial. Once we have what's left over and I don't have anything to do with this, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sacrifice with this stuff I don't really need or want. Guys, it's not a sacrifice. When you get the massive unexpected bonus or promotion, it's easy to give charitably. When you have a group of friends who care for and support you in the exact way you're looking for, it's easy to give friendship back. When your kids are obeying and not causing any friction, it's easy to parent them in a loving, sacrificial way and take them a Chuck E. Cheese whenever they want. You know? It's easy to give out of the surplus of your harvest because it's all gravy. You've already gotten what you need and what you want. It's easy to celebrate when it's not a sacrifice. But if our starting point is to only give in the good times, only when there's a surplus, then we never will in the bad times. When you lose your job and your finances are tight, the first thing that goes is charitable giving. When people who are close to you don't care for or support you in the ways you're looking for, you'll retreat and not give yourself to them anymore. When your kids stop obeying you and cause all kinds of strife in your life, you won't parent them in with sacrificial love anymore. You'll lash out. No more Chuck E. Cheese, right? If we're a people who only celebrate out of our surplus, we'll never celebrate in our deficit. Because we've let circumstances, life circumstances, determine how and when we celebrate. Our circumstances own us and control us if all we ever do is give out of our surplus. But if you celebrate sacrificially all the time, if you give financially all the time, serve and love your family and friends all the time, then bad times don't change that. Even if there's no harvest at all, like in Habakkuk, you'll still give sacrificially, you'll still celebrate because you won't be controlled by your circumstances, which means that you'll stop chasing new circumstances as a means for your joy. You'll stop believing that if your circumstances were different, if I just had more harvest, then life would be better. We'll stop believing, man, if I had more money, if I had more or better friends, if I had perfectly obedient kids, if I just lived in a different place. And when we stop believing that we need those things in order to be joyful, in order to celebrate, then we can begin to celebrate without those things because they don't own us anymore. Guys, we can celebrate sacrificially in hard times because God's people, our circumstances don't define us. And so, sounds like it's going to be a fun community group this week, right? Getting together in people's homes, in our church, around a circle, looking at each other, having someone look at you and say, hey, when times are the toughest, when you're at your lowest, what's the response? And we all go, we give more of ourselves. Sounds fun, right? No. Sounds terrible. That sounds burdensome. It is. It is. Which is why there's point number two. Point number two, it's not just that we celebrate sacrificially as God's people, but point number two, we can also celebrate joyfully. We can celebrate joyfully. Later in Deuteronomy 26, after the Israelites brought their fruits in sacrificial giving, in verse 5, it says this, we've got it up here on the screen. You are to respond at that time by saying in the presence of the Lord your God, the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a strong hand and an outstretched arm, with terrifying power, with signs and wonders. He led us to this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. I've now brought the first of the land's produce that you, Lord, have given me. What's God saying here? He's saying that his people weren't allowed to come and just celebrate sacrificially out of duty and just walk away. He's calling them to give joyfully, to give out of their joy. God is not like the boss of, you know, at our jobs who plans the corporate Christmas party and says, you're required to come and have fun. You ever been at one of those gatherings, some sort of like staff Christmas party, and you're like, man, I'd rather be anywhere else, but I've got to fake it. Oh, this is great. Great food. That's not God. God says, I actually want you to celebrate and to sacrifice out of the joy that you feel first. And what we see here in Deuteronomy is that one thing that kills our joyful celebration is if we believe that we've earned everything we have. If our starting place is, man, I've worked hard for my money and all this stuff. This is mine. I did it. I worked hard to be a good friend to you. I've earned my kids' obedience with my great parenting. If our starting point is that we believe we've earned everything we have, then we'll never have joy in our sacrifice. We'll never celebrate. But when we realize that everything we have is a gift, we're able to sacrifice joyfully. When we realize that the talents and skills we have to do the work to earn the money were given by God. When we realize that the ways that we're able to be good friends to others are our blessings that God has blessed us with. Our ability to parent well, if that's there at all, it's a gift from God. And that's what he's calling them to remember in Deuteronomy 26. He says, when you come and bring your sacrifice, remember the Lord God brought us out of Egypt. He led us to this place. He gave us this land. And now they're just giving back to God what God has given them. They were slaves in Egypt, and God stepped into Egypt and gave them everything. Do you know that God has done the same for you? That God has stepped into your Egypt, that he's rescued you, given you everything that you have. Everything that you and I have is a gift. And that's why Habakkuk says this in verse 19, the Lord, my Lord, is my strength. He makes my feet like those of a deer and enables me to walk on mountain heights. And so even Habakkuk's saying this while the land is producing nothing. Even when the land is producing nothing, God is still blessing Habakkuk, giving him strength, enabling him. Why? Because verse 18, I rejoice in the God of my salvation. Habakkuk has experienced everything he needs because he's experienced salvation. He recognizes the gift he's been given by God to be rescued, to be saved, to be a child of God, and he treasures it. And so now he's just overflowing in joy, and he's able to celebrate sacrificially even when his circumstances are bad. Why is it that when we treasure what God has done for us, the result will always be joyful sacrifice? That's always the result. When we truly treasure who Jesus is and what he's done, it'll always prompt in us a joyful sacrifice. Why is that? It's because of what Jesus said. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Whatever you and I most treasure, that's what we'll sacrifice most easily for. That's what we're most quickly to be joyful about. Here's what I mean. Like, let's say that you absolutely despise and detest and just, you just don't like Disneyland. Like, you just don't get the appeal to it at all. You don't get the allure. You hate the heat, the prices of everything there. You hate the crowds, the 2.5 hour waits. You just, everything about it. You're just like, I'm out. I don't feel the magic. But let's say your spouse comes to you and they just keep coming. Like, man, we really want to, we need to take the kids to Disney. Man, they'd have so much fun. Oh, it'd be so great. Don't you want to see the look on their faces? Just kind of keeps going. And finally you relent and you're just like, fine, let's do the Disney thing. All right. And you go. What's going to be happening in your heart the whole time? Just, oh man, I don't want to be here. Why did we do this? What's going on? Why is that slice of pizza $18? We're not eating today, guys. That's it. We've already paid too much to get here. No food today. We're going to pack PB&Js tomorrow and sneak them into this park. I mean, that's what's going to be going through your mind. Because you're like, you don't want to sacrifice because your heart's not in it. But let's say that you love Disney. Let's say that you're one of those like adult Disney people. You know what I'm talking about? Like, you know, you're like you're going to leave here, get in your car, and you've already got the mouse ears like hanging, sitting in the passenger seat. You're just going to put them on, drive around our community with the ears. You love it. You love the mouse. You love Disney. You get the magic. You're so happy when you're there. You know what's going to happen when you go there? You're going to freely, joyfully buy everything. Everything. You're not even going to care. It's not even going to feel like spending. You're actually going to have to watch yourself that you don't spend too much. Why? Because you're in a place where, man, my heart's here. I love this. Let's go. What's the difference in those two examples? It's in what your heart treasures. It's in what your heart treasures. We will most easily sacrifice for and have joy for what we treasure most. And that's why when we find ourselves in a situation where we could give sacrificially and joyfully of ourselves, when we find ourselves in that situation, that's kind of like a check engine light on our souls. Like if you haven't been giving sacrificially of your money, your time, your friendship, if you've only been giving out of your surplus, or if you have been giving sacrificially, but there's no joy in it, you're doing it all out of duty, obligation, or you don't want people to think badly of you. And that check engine light should just light up on you. Because it's actually a check heart light to show that there's still something that you're treasuring more than Jesus. And it means that you won't be able to celebrate and have true joy when life's circumstances aren't to your liking. If there's something you're still treasuring more than Jesus. And so what if that's where you're at? What if you have no desire to celebrate by giving of yourself sacrificially? But even if you could talk yourself into that, you definitely know that you wouldn't be doing it joyfully. What do we do then? How do you celebrate when you don't feel it at all? When the thief Zacchaeus met Jesus, he was a guy who he loved money. He was all about money. That was his treasure. When Zacchaeus met Jesus and God opened Zacchaeus' eyes to see the truth and beauty of who Jesus is and what Jesus had done for him and was going to do for him. Whenever Zacchaeus' eyes were open, you know what Zacchaeus did right there among all of his friends who knew that he loved money more than anything else? Zacchaeus stood up and declared before everybody, shouting in praise. He said, now that I know Jesus and I've seen him and his beauty and I treasure him more than anything, now I'm going to give away 50% of all that I have. 50% of my wealth, 50% of my worth, I'm going to give away. And you know what I think is really interesting? Is that, Jesus didn't like, you know, kind of turn to him and be like, hey, dude, like, settle down, dude. So slow your roll. God says only 10%, you know. 10% is the principle, all right? Let's keep it at that. It's not what Jesus says. Jesus looked at a man who now treasured him, treasured Jesus more than anyone else. And Jesus was extremely glorified and happy in what Zacchaeus was doing. It was Zacchaeus' joy to give because Zacchaeus now treasured Jesus more than his money. His heart was now free to give because money, his circumstances, didn't own him anymore. And that's the key to celebrating with joyful sacrifice. That's the key to having any true lasting joy in our lives at all. We've got to start by celebrating Jesus. We've got to start by celebrating Jesus. We've got to, like Zacchaeus, discover why Jesus is worth celebrating. Because if we don't celebrate Jesus, we will never celebrate in a way that looks like joyful sacrifice. We might sacrifice, but it won't be joyful. We might be joyful, can put on a happy face, but we'll never sacrifice. But it's only when we're truly celebrating Jesus that it'll free us to just freely give away our money. Not hoard it, not hold on to it. To freely give away our time and our energy to other people. Not say, I'll give to you if you give to me. I'll be your friend if you're friendly to me. It's only when we truly see Jesus and celebrate the truth and beauty of who he is that we're able to celebrate in a sacrificially beautiful, joyful way. And Jesus is worth celebrating, guys, because he did exactly what Habakkuk is talking about. Jesus lost everything. He lost everything. He lost every earthly possession. When Jesus went to the cross, he didn't even have any clothes. He was naked. Zero possessions at the end of his life. For Jesus, there was no harvest. His circumstances were terrible. He had nothing left to give, no surplus. He only had deficit. And at that point on the cross, when Jesus had nothing left to give, when there was no harvest, when there was only emptiness and deficit, when everybody had turned away from him and rejected him, and even his relationship with his father was cut off, at that time when there was nothing left to give, Jesus said these words, "My God, my God." And the significance of that is this. When you and I experience tough times, usually our words are, why God? Why God? Why don't I have a surplus anymore? Why am I in deficit now? Why is life tough? Why do these circumstances stink? Why God? Are you even there, God? I don't think you're there, God. I'm out, God. But Jesus, in his deficit, did not say, why God? He said, my God. You see, Jesus, even when he had nothing left to give at all, he didn't walk away. He didn't walk away from God. He didn't walk away from us. He gave every bit of himself. He gave his life. He gave totally and completely out of his deficit. He didn't give us his scraps. He gave us when he had nothing left, to the point where it changed his life. It cost him his life. And when we see this, when we believe this, then we will come to treasure Jesus more than anything else, and it'll change us. It'll change how we celebrate. It'll change how we give. It'll change how we view our life circumstances. Habakkuk says in verse 19 that in the midst of this deficit and no harvest, God is enabling him to walk on mountain heights. On mountain heights. That's a position of strength and security and safety. At this time in the ancient world, man, if you were on the mountain, that was the strongest point. Nobody attacks up. You lose that battle. The high ground wins. When you're high, you can see everything. You can see threats coming. The heights are a position of strength and stability. And what Habakkuk is saying is, even when the land isn't producing, even when all of life is going down into the sewer and everything stinks, God has taken me up on the mountain. I'm still in a place of security and strength and stability. And that's the reality, guys. If you have Jesus, even if all of your life circumstances stink, you still have strength and stability and security, even when there's no harvest. What are your life circumstances like right now? Habakkuk teaches us that even if they're the worst they've ever been, you can still celebrate. In Revelation 21, John sees the end of our story. Look at what he saw. Then I heard a loud voice from the throne. Look, God's dwelling is with humanity and he will live with them. They will bless his peoples. God himself will be with them and will be their God. God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Death will be no more. Grief, crying, pain will be no more because the previous things have passed away. Guys, there's coming a day where there's going to be no more difficulty, no more pain. There's coming a day where there will always be a harvest. We long for that day. But while we wait, during this time of struggle and difficulty, we can be a people who still have joy and freely give. We can be a people who celebrate always if we know the God of our salvation, if we know Jesus. Do you know him? Do you know him? Let's pray together.